Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and good evening. This is Joelle and I am the Vibrarian. Sorry, we're experiencing a little bit of technical difficulties at this time. So we're trying to see if everything is connected. If you could bear with us just a moment, then we will test everything out and begin with the conversation shortly. Okay, so it sounds like we're clear. We're going to go ahead and see if we can have this conversation. Trying a lot of technologies. Let's see. Had technical problems. Okay, so sometimes that happens. So this is Joelle, and I am the Vibrarian. If you have connected for conversational elevation this evening, our topic is varied from week to week, and you can connect for these conversations live by calling 646-787-8436, or you can catch the replay on any of the podcast directories. We're in iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Verbal for these replays. Anytime that you connect is the perfect time. And each week we're here. We're here for about an hour's worth of conversation. So checking to see again, people are telling me that they're getting dead air. I'm getting chat messages. So just checking to see if the sound is clear now. One moment. All right. So this evening, I wanted to talk about expectations. What did you expect is the topic of conversation. And expectations is one of those loaded words. But in this case, this evening, I expected to be able to start the show and not have any technical difficulties and be able to, get things going in the right flow, but it looks like that is not necessarily happening. I believe what I will have to do is reschedule this for another evening because the things that I say are really too important for them to be missed. Give me one more second here. All right, everyone says that they are able to hear me now. Okay, I'm hoping that everything is clear going forward. To everyone who is connecting through the phone line, thank you for your patience. I see you all there. And for those of you that are listening later as well. So the Vibrarian, we're out here on social media, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, trying to spread love and positive energy. I invite you to connect with me at The Vibrarian. That's TheVibrarian. So, I mean, I think this is a perfect lead-in for the conversation of what did you expect and if something meets or does not meet your expectations. I had a bit of a technology challenge when I started this evening, which was quite unexpected. But as we talked about last week, when we go with the flow, then there are ways that we can manage this stuff in a way that is less stressful and does not totally derail our ideas and plans and intentions. So we're practicing flow and flexibility this evening, but talking about expectations. Now, people are very challenged when we encounter stuff that does not turn out as we planned or thought that it would. Now, when they say such a thing as reasonable expectation, then that is something that is implied that the way that it goes is how we think a thing should go. It's reasonable to think that a concert will start on time because it has been announced to start at a specific time. But as anybody who's ever been to a Lauryn Hill concert can tell you, that is probably not going to be an expectation that is met because she is known for not starting on time. And an expectation then has developed among those people who accept her for her quirky artist that she is. They know that they can, you know, expect that there will be a lateness factor to the experience. And for many people, they've decided that that's simply okay, and they will do whatever it takes and take however long it takes to wait for her to begin her performance because her artistry is just that good to them. For other people, they've decided, you know, that is not something that I want to experience because if I've paid for my ticket and the concert says they are going to be starting at 10, then I don't have all night to wait for this experience to start. So a person would adjust their expectation or then choose not to join in the experience of that because this person has already not met their expectation in some way. When we set out ideas and goals for ourselves, we're really using our rational mind. And that's the way that planning and preparation, if we follow the instructions on something, if we do what is asked, take care of the tasks that are outlined, then we expect that the goal will be accomplished. If you are joining a gym or practicing a new way of eating, then you believe that by following these steps that your expected outcome will be the achieved goal at the end of it. But when something does not meet our expectations, it can be a challenging and even painful experience. And so for those of us that are dealing, especially in interpersonal relationships, with the people-y part of being in connection with someone, oftentimes that is where we experience the most unmet expectation. We can, you know, find out that a person is not who we thought that they were. We can find out that in our time of need or in asking to do something, someone let us down or did not meet what we thought that they should do as a dynamic of our relationship. Now, this is where it gets very tricky because in talking about how an expectation is developed, then there are, we can choose, it's kind of interesting to articulate because we can choose to have expectations that may not actually be based in reality. Right. And so for many people, we're here at Valentine's Day. So that is a time when there has been this great push by the commercial world to have us expect to be shown love in a romantic gesture. If not every day, then at least this one day of the year, we should be able to feel the love from those who say that they feel that way for us. But what happens then if you are in a really, truly loving dynamic with a person who says, you know what, I don't care what day it is, I'm not buying you flowers, we're not going on a romantic date or any of those other things that the commercial world says that I should do for you because I show you the rest of the year the value and the romance and the loving things that I want to do for you. I'm not going to feel pressured into just doing them on this one day. Now, for a person then who sees coworkers with flowers delivered, I remember being in corporate America, I would always see the flower guy coming up the elevator. I worked in a building with 55 stories. So, you know, the elevators were very busy with deliveries down at the security stand. You would see all these flower bouquets as people were coming down and the recipients were always so blushing and, oh, my gosh, look at my flowers. You know, it was beautiful. It made everybody smile. And I've received a few of those moments myself, right? And it does make one feel good to see on a picture, feel or experience this validating way in a public forum of someone expressing their feelings for you. However, how we develop these expectations, what is the goal and the influence that is set in order to foster this idea? Is it something that is actually intended for us as a collective to be healthy for us? Are we expecting to have love expressed as a beautiful emotion, or is it because we are expressing a commercial impulse that will sell flowers, florists wait all year for that day so because they know they're going to make the revenue needed to make their budgets, all of the industry surrounding something where an expectation has been created. So it's very a nuanced kind of thing to be living in a society that begins to put forth external reasons for something to occur. And what I have found is that as I've examined, then why am I having this expectation? And oftentimes what causes the examination is when I have been disappointed by an unmet expectation. And so as I'm sitting with that feeling of either sadness or loss or resentment towards the situation, then as I examine it, it's like, well, why did I even think that this was something that I needed to experience and that the other person should have done for me? Now, in the case of friendship dynamics and things of that nature, of course, then we have an expectation because of the relationship exchange that we build with people, that when we are their comforting shoulder or their ear or their at-a-girl cheerleader, that they will in turn be that at-a-girl cheerleader, comforting ear, bring a box of tissues and ice cream over kind of friend back to us. And so what happens is that we develop this habit pattern and this mutual exchange, but then when an incident occurs, maybe unbeknownst to us, we've called our friend and they're dealing with things so deeply personal that they haven't shared with us. And so we think that it's just a normal day in a friend world. And when we then say, well, I need you, and what about this? And this, you know, I need to have my friend time. And then that person is not able to meet that need. Then how do we judge them? Are we going to become accusatory or blaming and feel like there is a problem with our friendship? More than likely, for relationships that have developed over a period of time and exchange and investment, we leave space in there for there to be the real personal life of that person. We don't automatically assume that they are not feeling the friendship love anymore. We give them an opportunity to be where they need to be without judgment and without feeling or lessening or pulling back our energy from the dynamic. Where we learn is that then through a period of routine exchanges, if the dynamic begins to have an unmet expectation regularly rather than in an instance, then that is where we are going to be called into evaluating and adjusting our expectations so that we will not experience the unpleasant dynamic going forward. Now, it's very interesting because many of us who have been in a corporate work environment, there is this whole thing of the performance evaluation. That is where once a year you get to hear from either your peers, if it's a peer review kind of environment, or from your supervisors and HR, you get to see what your job effectiveness and performance has been through the eyes of someone else. That is one of the key factors when we're talking about being judged in terms of an expectation. It's something that we are looking outside of ourselves and saying that it needs to meet a certain level to be considered successfully obtained. So I've had plenty of performance evaluations that I walked away from with a not happy feeling. And why is that? It was not because I was a bad worker. I was always very competent and good at what I did, well enough that I was never fired for my job. But during a performance evaluation, there is this energy of, well, we're not going to just give you all fives. We're not going to give you exceeds expectations, because really nobody always exceeds expectations. And I've had that said to me in different environments when the supervisor kind of says, I hate to do this, I mean, but you know, I just really can't give you all five. So what we're going to do is sit here and we'll say that you need to improve on X, Y, Z. And let me tell you, that does not feel good. And that is a very sour kind of experience to have. I have a good friend who, it was very ironic because they were selected to be employee of the year across all of the departments in their work environment. It was a very collective kind of operational space. And so each of the managers were able to review and select the person that they thought was stellar above all else of all the awesome people who'd received the monthly employee of the month kind of things. This friend was selected as the prime, awesome, wonderful in the first time unanimous decision. And then about a week later, it was time for performance review, and the performance review came out, and let's just say, instead of all fives, there were threes and fours. It was not a pretty situation at all for that person, and quite frankly, there's a level of, feeling that shifted as a result of this experience, and conversations were had as to how is it that if other departmental people, including my own, all said that I was the example to all other employee examples of what an outstanding individual should be, and here you're telling me that I am at medium, like a C level, meets expectations, and you're refusing to concede that in this one instance, this particular year, I actually did hit all exceeds expectations across the board, as evidenced by the little plaque that is now sitting on my office. You can imagine that that changed the feeling, the vibration of this dynamic, and the work situation shortly thereafter shifted to where that was no longer an employee-employer relationship. And you can only imagine how demoralizing it can be to have this carrot dangling out there that says, oh, we need you to do this, 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 and this. But even though you do a great job of it, we're never going to say that you actually did a great job of it, because, see, our system isn't really set up for that, right? So there are certain systems that are not set up for people to be evaluated correctly, to be positively affirmed, to receive actual unbiased assessment of who they are being in that environment. It can be very toxic if you are always pitted against other colleagues in terms of, well, this person made such and such number of calls and you didn't make this many calls, or this person was achieved this particular goal and they're the benchmark and you did not meet our minimum expectations. Matter of fact, the way that it began to be in the later years of my career is that you had a hand in setting your own performance evaluation criteria for the next year. It felt kind of interesting because it was like you're setting your own self up for failure, if you will. I won't say failure because that's pretty harsh, but I always thought it was pretty ironic that now not only am I sitting here having to spend a half a day going through all the ways that I know that you are going to evaluate me and putting out ideas of my own. It's like I'm setting up my own gauntlet, right? And I always felt that was kind of disingenuous because then they're like, you're doing it to yourself. So, you know, you're forced to sit here and think of how am I going to perform? What are the ways that I see myself doing this job that I'm doing? And how can I see it through the eyes of the HR system that is very fixed and rigid? And then at the end of the year, I'm going to have to eat whatever it is that I spooned up with my supervisor. And more than likely, I already know that I will never be seen as having actually gone above and beyond to that exceeded expectation mark. It's no wonder that corporate America or jobs and job performance, while people are not happy in those dynamics. Because if you're constantly in a situation where you are not valued, no matter what value you see in yourself or how competent that you know you are, the external system that always tells you you are not good enough, you are barely sufficient. Those systems are so toxic. And there are many ways that we receive this message beyond work. We can see from television shows, like if you're a child of the 80s, you know, we watch like Bill Cosby and Family Ties. So there is this image and this model of what a family looks like or what a house looks like. And I remember that when like Roseanne came out, it was considered groundbreaking because here's this family living in like a house that is not fancy or expensive, that's just normal, like quote unquote around that normal. It's just a normal life that is more in keeping with the average American life looked like. But yet and still, there were images portrayed and sent out to us as to what it looks like to be family. Ever since the modern television era, which a half a century, you know, from the 40s, 50s, and certainly then into the cable and movie-centric thing, we are constantly bombarded with messages of what life should look like. This is what your house should look like if it's properly decorated. Oh, well, this is normal for a family to have two cars and a two-car garage and for both of them to be earning income and the kids to all be in school and well-behaved, right? These messages are creating paradigms that then many people will look at and see themselves as lacking when they never would have seen themselves as lacking had it not been for that constant messaging. I remember being like at a certain state and my ex-husband and I, you know, the expectation was, well, you're married, now you need to buy a house. You know, if you're renting, why are you renting? You're both adults. You need to be buying, you know, like get a house. That's what it, you do when you're a responsible person and an adult. And so when we did that, and there were a lot of situations where we were trying to meet the expectations of what a marital couple should be doing, when it turned out, none of those clothes fit right, right? And we learned like hard lessons through our relationship about expectations in terms of what did a husband look like? What did a wife look like in terms of the roles and dynamics that were playing out? Instead of actually just then being comfortable where we were as a couple, we began to wrestle with expectations. One of the things that I experienced is a beautiful series of years of doing real therapy work. And as part of that dynamic, there was group therapy involved. And it was so interesting because every single person sitting in this group of like 8 or 10 people each week doing work on emotional health and well-being, the continuous theme was about roles. Am I meeting the role as a father? I've got this stress because I've had these expectations of making sure my family is stable and making sure that I meet the expectations of my supervisor and boss. And my wife is asking me to do this. And, you know, the stresses of that put this person into an emotional and mental crisis. There was a mother who was just so heartbroken because the relationship with her daughter was constantly telling her, you're not the mother that you should be. And it's kind of the reverse of how you see where they're like, oh, we go to therapy to talk about our parents. But in this case, she was going to therapy to talk about her daughter's projection onto her and how she could ever communicate to her daughter that she truly did love her when her daughter was expecting her to be a different person than who she was. And how she could grow into a different dynamic, even if she didn't have to then fake this mother that, you know, her daughter was expecting her to be, because that was not the actual solution to the issue either. How many of us begin to behave outside of ourselves because we are trying to meet another person's expectations? Many of us, I think, can identify with having gone through that process. And when we step into a place and when we're no longer going to place our sense of value on another person's idea of who we should be, we begin to disengage from those environments, be they work or relationship or friendship and or health environments. We begin to extract ourselves, and that can be a somewhat painful process, but it is also empowering. For many people who experience a job loss, and then they're constantly, you know, they said that the recessions have been terrible for people's mental health because as they've applied for jobs over and over and over again, although there are tens of thousands of people applying for these jobs, the personalization of, well, I am not a good person because I am not able to beat out the crowd to get a job. And the self-esteem impacts of that have been studied now as we have been in prolonged periods of unemployment where people have suffered great mental health challenges. And it's very hard to begin to say, well, I know that I know how to do my job. I know that I'm competent, that I'm skilled, that I have the knowledge and expertise to do this. Why won't someone else see it? What is it about me that I need to do to make myself stand out? And then we go to career coaches and we go to resume workshops and then we get more training and more things to add to our resume, when the fact of the matter is, the system is not meant to hire more people. It's not about you at all. And many times when we're dealing with external systems, it's not about us at all. It's about the system. It's about the HR system that says we have to have a reason and a way to effectively fire and terminate people. And then we know we're going to have to do minimal rewards to our work population if we're going to want them to stay and be happy. But over the years, those minimal rewards that used to come have gotten even less and less because workplaces are dealing with a worker population that is desperate to keep their employment. So you no longer have to give bonuses and plaques and watches and pins of achievement for people when they've been good employees. You just have to let them keep their job because there's somebody else desperate who is waiting to be employed if you are not satisfied with the way that we are treating you. These are sad emergences of an economy and a way of life that is not people-centered at all. when you are able to be involved in people-focused dynamics, there is an absolute shift. Because then we are not expected to do things and expected to be subpar as a natural state. In people-centered systems, there are ways for everyone to be encouraged and acknowledged and rewarded or validated or also supported in what they're doing by just being themselves. And for many people, this looks like stepping into entrepreneurial pathways in terms of doing what it is that you know how to do in order to support yourself economically. And that is one of the beautiful parts about this flowering of a new economy, which says that we are going to be able to step out of these toxic systems and into new systems that will emerge from what we are doing now. Atlanta is a beautiful place because it is known to be very supportive of small businesses. I know so many small business owners, and there is a support of that, a focus of people to spend their money with the people they know rather than with the big brands and names. And I think it's just beautiful. And that is actually one of the reasons why I think I read in Essence Magazine in 1988, when I was looking at college locations, that the public transportation system and the ability for business startups to happen were two of the positive things I remember about Atlanta. Now, I will say at that time, the problems with MARTA, if you're in Atlanta, I know you're like, public transportation, really? You know, but at the time, Atlanta had not grown to the size where it is today. So the public transportation challenges that we experienced today were not there. Anyway, that was a side note. But Atlanta has absolutely been a place where there have been ways for people to step out of the mainstream matrix and into a more holistic way of being, where they're not looking at being told all the time that they are substandard or subpar. One of the interesting things about is one of the best-selling books in of all time is What to Expect When You're Expecting. And it's a book for mothers that tells you month by month, week by week, what is happening with the development of the baby inside of you with little pictures. And then like there's another book, I think, that's like What to Expect After the Baby's Born. I don't know what the clever title is, but then it tells you every year what developmental markers like are supposed to be observed as you are interacting with your baby as it grows. Knowing that, you know, the eyes will come into focus and the hair will change texture and that as they begin teething, like all these things, right? A guidebook out there that was like so relieving because many women were in the dark about the whole pregnancy thing. And that's why, you know, we assume that everybody would know, well, when the baby is, you know, at 6 months, you're going to have a show, you're going to show the belly and your clothes, you're going to need to get new clothes. But when the book was released, it turns out so many women had anxiety that they were not expressing because they really didn't know and understand what was going to be happening to their body as they were carrying this child to term. And so for a great many of women who also then experienced embarrassment to say, I don't know exactly what's happening. It gave them a way to go to the library and check out the book or go to the store and pick up a copy of the book and bring it home and read it in the privacy of their own space to begin to educate themselves about an ongoing thing that was already happening within them. So much pressure that you're going to just automatically know and be how you should be in the world. Well, who is placing that expectation on us? I think that when we live and we realize that, you know what, nobody told me that I was going to be dealing with a divorce, or nobody told me that I was going to be dealing with a tragic loss of someone. There was no manual that came in with baby Joelle that was like, okay, at 25, you're going to be challenged with such and such. I'm very thankful for the fact that I was able to go to have therapy and to connect with practitioners at different times of my life who gave me tools, and not just through therapeutic places, but through, you know, church at the time and other spiritual practices, and through friendship and observing other people, I began to amass an experience that helped me manage those expectations and filter them differently so that I was no longer stressing about being something that the external world told me that I should be. Now, most people, when if you're pregnant, you say, oh, are you expecting a boy or a girl? Many parents will say, I don't care as long as it's healthy. To me, that is a profound statement. Yes, we all like to say, well, we know what kind of gifts to get you and what color to paint the baby's room if we know what the child is going to be, what gender the child is going to be. But stepping into a looser kind of acceptance that says, I don't care as long as it is healthy. We can apply that same statement to so many different areas of our life. Okay, like if I'm at a job and I'm going to be evaluated for my performance and I'm going to be doing the tasks that I know how to do every day, is it healthy for me to do these things? If I become overworked and overstressed because I'm bringing work home with me because I've got goals that need to be met, and I know that my superiors are not happy with me, or I'm not happy with me because I'm not obtaining, you know, X many sales or reports and things of that nature, has it become unhealthy? And if so, how can I shift that expectation of myself, first of all, to be more kind to myself? Our own expectations of how we're supposed to respond are the most harmful to us. We do it to ourselves, right? Before anybody else gets a chance to observe and critique and criticize us, we've already decided whether or not we have met an expectation. And when you come to this conclusion that, you know, I'm good with this. I feel healthy about what I did. I feel like I'm working the appropriate number of hours. I feel like the product that I'm putting out is the best product that I could. When you begin to get those criticisms from the external world, it then rolls off your back a little differently. And you say, well, I don't need this validation from you. It doesn't matter for me that you think I disappointed you. Depending on our dynamic, we can feel compassion that the person thinks that we didn't meet their expectations. But in some cases, self-love calls us to say, well, you know, that's just where you are with it. And I don't have to receive that energy from you of your disappointment or your sadness or your accusations. And if you choose to disconnect from me because I am not meeting your expectation, then what can I do? I can only be me, is a song that was out when I was in college. I can only be me and be me healthily in any circumstance. As an expectation of what something is going to look like, having the basic framework of, you know, I don't know what's coming next, but I know that it's going to be healthy. That is the minimum expectation that I have, is that it is not going to be harmful to me, that it is going to be filled with something that makes me happy, that makes me feel good, that I am able to contribute to in a way overall that the bottom line is it's healthy, period. If you are looking then at if a relationship that you are doing with someone else is something that you want to continue feeding into and to doing that dance with the person. The first question you can ask is it healthy? So if my friend was not able to be there for me because they had something else going on, or they were really tired and needed to just say no in order to balance their own cup, if I can see that as that was actually the healthy choice for them, even though I might have had a need that was unmet at the moment, how can I judge them as being wrong for choosing the healthiest thing for themselves? Not only do I choose the healthiest thing in my world, I can see other people then expressing their healthiest outcomes and be in a neutral space with that. Now, many people, when we are, you know, looking to create new friendships and new dynamics and new dates and new person, when we have set up this idea that, you know, once I begin talking to you, then I'm expecting this to go somewhere. Where are we going on our next date after we've had one good successful date, right? Where are we, when are we going to talk again after we've had a phone conversation? I'm expecting to hear from you, but I didn't hear from you, and now I'm wondering where this is going. When we step into a place of the healthiness question is, did this lack of meeting my expectation, was it really unhealthy? Was I made sick by the fact that I did not go on another date with you when I thought that I should go on another date with you? Was it a problem for me that I didn't hear from you when I expected to hear from you? Or was there an unhealthy dynamic that I was seeking to have filled by having you evidence to me my value through a phone call or asking me on a date? We can begin to see where the unhealthy dynamics of our own self appear in the expectations we have of others. And again, I'll say, to take it back to the question of, I don't care what it looks like as long as it's healthy. So if when you connect with the person, the conversation is good and it's positive and it is a beautiful thing, then that's healthy. So the only expectations you have is that next time we interact, whenever that is, it will be healthy. I no longer will then become disappointed if the phone doesn't ring or if you didn't ask me out on the date as quickly as I wanted you to ask me on the date. Or, matter of fact, if you did not do the romantic gesture on Valentine's Day that I thought that you should, was it unhealthy that this did not occur? Or am I bringing unhealthy mindsets into a dynamic? Am I bringing projections of how something should look into a functional dynamic in a way that is then damaging? If I would have in my marriage, if my ex-husband, I would have been more concerned about like how we just were ourselves rather than what a husband is supposed to do versus what a wife was supposed to do, then we probably could have found a lot more common ground and happiness. But we were constantly struggling against the shoulda, coulda, woulda, and what am I going to do if my wife is not, you know, doing all these things that all the other guys say that their wife are doing? And what am I supposed to do if my husband isn't doing all the things that a man should do, quote unquote? I'm doing air quotes with that, right? How much unhappiness can be avoided if we turn back to say, well, was it healthy for me to abdicate all of the things that I thought a man should do over to someone else? Or was it healthy for me to be empowered and do the things that needed to get done? Was it healthy for my husband to expect that only I would cook and he would never cook because that was the wife's job? Or was it healthy for him to cook for himself and make sure that his needs were met in the case that I was not available to do my wifely duties, right? So you can see how these ideas and positions that we have been told things are supposed to look like can quickly turn into unhealthy dynamics where we're miserable unnecessarily, when we would just step out of those projections and find that we're a lot more happy than we thought we were. How can that shift your reality when you say, well, you know, I have this plan for my business and my goal, and I'm going to work for it, but if it didn't quite become profitable in the time that you thought that it would, if you didn't have the sales that you thought you would, when you step back into the, but was I doing something that was healthy and that I loved the whole time? That's all I needed from this, was somewhere where I could have my little healthy, happy space of being me. Then we will be able to have the stamina to continue being in that high vibration until the time comes when our business is profitable. We will have the understanding, compassion of our friendship dynamics and exterior relationships to go the distance, as long as we're healthy and happy in the present term, because we now are releasing ourselves from the structure of focused, it must look like this, it must turn out like that, it has to look like X, Y, Z, or I didn't achieve it. I would challenge you to begin filtering and making sure that your criteria is coming from within, and that is coming from a space where it is positive, rather than adopting these systems of external criteria that will always and constantly keep you wanting more at a level where you're saying unmet more than met when you're doing your post-survey, when customer service issues arrive, when you're evaluating things. Get to the place where you're comfortable with saying it was all tens. You know, like I had a client earlier today who, she was like, I woke up today, it's a beautiful day. Her expectation at that point is at 10 out of 10. It's a beautiful day. I woke up. It didn't matter that it was 20 degrees and there was, you know, snow on the ground and that it was quarantine and all those things. What mattered was the expectation was that when I opened my eyes, it was already done. And everything from there on out was just a beautiful moment and intention to experience until the next time I closed my eyes. That's a very freeing space to be in. It's flexible. It allows you space to go with the flow, as we've been talking about, because our only guideline is for happiness and healthiness. For everyone who's been listening through the phone lines, and if you have anything to contribute, just press the #1 key. That lets me know that you want to come on. And for anyone who then is listening after the fact to the broadcast, I would love it if you would pop on to, you know, the Facebook page and leave a comment about an experience that you had about hopefully an exceeded expectation. And if you are challenged by feelings of resentment from other times when you experienced something that was unmet, and you would like to talk more about that, I'm always open for additional conversations. Yesterday, I watched a documentary called Fake Famous, and we will be getting into that next week because we're going to talk about this idea of influence and how social media and living life through that lens of our viewing people through their Facebook feeds and the public way that they're expressing themselves, how that has influenced us in both positive and negative ways. So we'll be taking a deep dive into the whole influencing of others and how our vibe and attracting our tribe can be a positive thing, and also then how that can be negative when we are experiencing these vibrations that are telling us something that we are lacking and push us to try to achieve those things through the influence. Marketing and the corporate mindset are huge in terms of setting expectation and influence. And it happens in ways that are so subtle and yet so glaring at the same time. So it will be a very interesting conversation to have next week. And I'm also forward to having the virtual elevation station coming up this March on the 20th and 21st. I will have online appointments available for a variety of people who are contributing their gifts to help people live their best life. We'll have psychics and coaches and metaphysicians, Reiki healers, and so you'll be able to have appointments with each of these people throughout the day on the 20th and 21st, which is also the equinox, and it is a beautiful balanced day as we shift energies from winter to spring for new growth and possibility. So, you know, I have a beautiful expectation that all will be as it should be, and that those who are needed to come will come, and those who are working to provide the services will be the ones who show up. Again, it's a beautiful place to be in a space of having a basic expectation that all is always aligned and happening in divine plan. In my framework, there is nothing that happens outside of the divine movement towards my best and highest life. So even when things are challenged in that they didn't look like what I thought that they should look like, I'm able to move through that because I can see for the grand design and know and trust that everything is always aligned despite my perception of it. And when I go within and take away that external experience of it, that is the bottom line every time, that I am in the healthiest, happiest flow that is possible for me at any given moment. So this has been Conversational Elevation, and my name is Joelle. I thank you for contributing your energy to the space that was created this evening, and also for the experience of the expectations at the beginning when things technology-wise didn't exactly line up as I thought they would. I appreciate your patience, and I think it's a it's an interesting kind of addition to the experience to have had that happen this week of all weeks. Seems like it was a perfect kind of teachable moment, if you will. So this week, I wish for you that your life exceeds any expectation, in that the blessings you receive are so abundant, so plentiful, that you just can't even carry it all within yourself, and that blessing energy spills out from you and blesses the world around you. That the light in me sees and honors the light in you. Namaste.